Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really significant issue, how media bias can sort of chip away at our understanding of what's actually true. And our exploration today is guided by the work of Jeff Bernard. He's been looking really closely at this, specifically within, well, a certain segment of our media landscape.
That's right. We're focusing on Bernard's analysis of media bias, you know, mostly the kind found in far right-wing political publications and podcasts.
Right.
He's looked at things like online shows, influencers, especially those on platforms like Rumble, trying to understand the dynamics there.
Exactly. So our goal here, just to be clear, isn't about taking sides. It's about trying to understand through Bernard's research how this specific area of media operates.
Yeah, the kinds of narratives it promotes and what the potential impact might be on, well, how its audience sees the world.
Okay, so let's get into it. Let's maybe start with something pretty fundamental to how we all process information. Confirmation bias.
Ah, confirmation bias. Bernard talks about this quite a bit. It's something, you know, we all kind of do.
We do.
We tend to seek out and prefer information that just confirms what we already believe. It's like a mental shortcut.
It really is. Like our brains have a built-in filter, right? And Bernard points out how the sheer variety of media today just amplifies this effect hugely.
Oh, absolutely. It's never been easier to find news and opinions that just line up perfectly with your own views.
Yeah.
And Bernard raises a really interesting point about this tied to, well, the business side of media. Outlets often need to attract and keep an audience to stay afloat, you know, to be profitable.
Right. And this is where it gets tricky. Bernard suggests that one key way to build that loyal audience is to consistently feed them content that validates their existing beliefs.
Exactly. Giving people what they already think they know, essentially. Mm-hmm. And this can show up in, you know, how stories are selected, how they're framed, which commentators get the spotlight. If an outlet always leans one way,
it's naturally going to attract and keep viewers or listeners who lean that same way. It makes sense.
It does.
And Bernard mentions it's not just about the facts, but also about how the content makes you feel, isn't it? The emotional connection.
Absolutely. Content that sparks strong emotions, whether it's that aha moment of agreement or maybe anger or just feeling understood, that stuff tends to grab our attention.
And get shared more.
Definitely. And tapping into that confirmation bias is a very effective way to create that kind of emotional link.
Bernard even brings up examples, mentioning concerns raised about outlets like, say, Fox News and Newsmax, largely catering to conservatives.
Well, maybe MSNBC appeals more to liberals. He notes that perception.
Right. But the key point Bernard stresses, as I understand it, isn't that having a perspective is the problem itself.
No, exactly. The real issue comes up when that drive to keep the audience happy leads to maybe prioritizing a skewed version of events or even spreading stuff that's just not factually solid.
Okay, so Bernard goes beyond the theory. He digs into specific patterns he saw in the right-wing media content he analyzed. Let's start with a big one he identified, this deep distrust of institutions.
Yeah, this is a really central theme in his analysis. He saw a significant amount of skepticism aimed at, well, the federal government, mainstream media, Hollywood, even academia.
Sort of traditional gatekeepers.
Exactly. They're often painted as pushing a specific, maybe hidden agenda. The narrative becomes that these established authorities just can't be trusted.
Bernard highlights those narratives about government corruption, the deep state idea you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
It creates this feeling that things aren't what they seem.
Precisely. And this suspicion carries over to the media itself. It's often portrayed as biased, manipulative, you know, deliberately controlling information, suppressing other views.
Which understandably can lead to a pretty widespread drop in faith in these core institutions.
It really can.
Okay. Another theme Bernard points out is this strong emphasis on self-reliance, often mixed with a kind of underlying fear about, well, the future.
Mm-hmm. Bernard noticed a real focus on individual independence, this need to be prepared. Yeah. And it seems fueled by that lack of trust in the bigger systems.
So how does that show up?
Well, you see promotion of things like survivalism or prepping, you know, stockpiling supplies, learning certain skills.
Right.
And also maybe an interest in alternative health practices, things outside the medical mainstream.
And financially too, right?
Right.
Bernard mentions a push towards things like gold or crypto.
Yes, exactly. Investments seen as maybe safer, more independent from traditional financial systems, it taps into this feeling of potential instability.
The idea that you need to take matters into your own hands to protect yourself, your family?
That seems to be the underlying message, yes.
Then there's what Bernard describes as the U.S. versus them paradigm. That sounds incredibly divisive.
It really does. Bernard outlines how this media often draws a very sharp line. On one side, conservatives, often presented as, like, real Americans.
And on the other.
Liberals, progressives, often labeled as elites or woke. This framing turns social and political issues less into points of discussion and more into these fundamental clashes.
Clashes between values, identities.
Exactly. Not much room for common ground there.
And this feeds right into the culture wars that Bernard also highlights.
It's a direct link. Issues like abortion, gun control, LGBTQ plus rights, they're often framed not just as policy debates, but as existential threats to conservative values.
So you get things like anti-woke activism.
Yes, Bernard points to that. And also the use of moral panic around these topics. It creates this sense of urgency, this feeling that society's core norms are under attack.
It sounds like, according to Bernard's analysis, a lot of this content really operates on a foundation of, well, heightened anxiety and suspicion.
That's a very significant takeaway, I think. Bernard observed the amplification of all sorts of fears. Societal breakdown, economic collapse, rising crime.
Even global conspiracies.
Yes, those too. And this often involves identifying scapegoats and promoting various conspiracy theories as explanations for these anxieties.
Which leads us to another point Bernard makes. The prevalence of actual conspiracy theories and speculative narratives in this media sphere.
Right. And what's notable is how often unverified claims are presented almost as fact. The audience is encouraged to do their own research, connect the dots.
Which often leads them down a rabbit hole towards conspiratorial thinking.
It certainly can. These narratives offer alternative explanations that directly clash with mainstream accounts, which naturally fosters more doubt and suspicion.
Bernard also noticed the significant role of religious and alternative media within this whole ecosystem. It's not just purely political content.
No, not at all. He notes the promotion of faith-based content, but also the active highlighting of alternative media platforms.
As a way to bypass the mainstream.
Exactly. To challenge the narratives coming from established news outlets, there's this clear encouragement. Distrust those sources. Turn to these alternatives for the real story.
And within this world, it seems like certain figures get elevated, almost put on a pedestal.
Bernard calls this the hero narrative. You see these charismatic leaders within the movement getting intense praise, sometimes building up a very strong personal following, almost like a cult of personality.
And how are they portrayed?
Often as champions, you know, standing up for conservative values against this hostile establishment. It reinforces that whole us versus them thing.
Right.
And sometimes they're presented as victims, too, victims of unfair attacks or persecution, which just solidifies that heroic image even more.
Lastly, Bernard flags its recurring theme of comparing America unfavorably, either to other places or maybe to a perceived better time in the past, a sense of decline.
Yes, this narrative of decline is common. It contrasts America's current state, as they see it, with a more idealized past, or maybe compares the U.S. favorably to countries seen as more conservative or traditional.
And there are warnings about socialism.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Bernard notes frequent warnings against socialism, portraying it as this major threat to American identity, freedom, prosperity.
So Bernard didn't just analyze this from afar. He actually, like, immersed himself in it to see how it works on the inside.
He did. Bernard reviewed content from prominent figures. He mentions Charlie Kirk and various influencers, especially on platforms like Rumble.
And what did he find?
He experienced firsthand how the algorithms on these platforms can really pull users deeper and deeper into one specific viewpoint, creating that, you know, filter bubble or echo chamber effect.
And did he notice anything about how these influencers or hosts were trying to persuade their audiences?
Oh, absolutely. Bernard observed specific rhetorical strategies being used, techniques designed to subtly guide listeners towards certain conclusions.
Often conspiratorial ones.
Often aligning with conspiratorial thinking, yes. But without always stating those conclusions outright as hard facts. It's more about planting seeds of doubt, encouraging the audience to connect those dots themselves.
Interesting. And it ties into something else he noticed. The advertising on these platforms seems to fit right in.
It really does. Bernard found the ads are very much in sync with the values and, importantly, the anxieties being pushed in the content itself.
Like what kind of ads?
Lots of ads for things like gold and silver investments, alternative health products, home security systems, things like that.
It's targeted, speaking directly to those concerns about instability and self-reliance.
Exactly. It mirrors that distrust and unease that's often central to the actual shows or podcasts.
And Bernard suggests this constant focus on distrust, fear, paranoia. it can have a real emotional toll.
He observed that, yes, it could potentially leave consumers feeling angry, fearful, anxious, maybe even depressed or disillusioned over time.
And those strong emotions, Bernard suggests, actually help keep this whole media ecosystem running.
That's his argument. That powerful us versus them narrative thrives on intense emotions. Anger, suspicion, that can be really powerful drivers for keeping an audience engaged and loyal.
Wow. Okay, this all brings us to a really critical point. Bernard connects this to something that's been, well, a huge topic, the ongoing narrative around the 2020 election and January 6th.
Yes, Bernard draws a direct line from these broader themes of media bias and deep distrust to the persistent belief among some that the 2020 election was fraudulent.
Despite all the evidence.
Despite the extensive evidence to the contrary.
Yeah.
You know, the recounts, the audits, the court rulings, all upholding the results.
And the numbers holding that belief are still quite striking. Bernard mentions that 2023 PRRI survey, roughly a third of Americans still believe the election was stolen.
That's what the survey indicated, yes. And as Bernard underscores, this belief is very strongly linked to political party affiliation.
Right. The same survey showed a huge majority of Republicans holding that view, compared to much smaller numbers of independents and Democrats.
Exactly.
And the PRRI data also showed a really clear connection between where people get their news and this belief, didn't it? It wasn't just random.
Not at all. Bernard points out that an overwhelming percentage, something like 92% of those who said they trust far-right news sources most, also believed the election was stalled.
That really highlights the power of these media environments in shaping reality for people.
It certainly seems to suggest that.
And this kind of skewed narrative, according to Bernard, extends to how the January 6th Capitol attack is portrayed within these same media circles, too.
Yes, he points out the vastly different ways that day is interpreted, while, you know, most Americans saw it as a serious attack on democracy.
A significant minority, often consuming this type of media, tend to downplay it, or even justify the actions.
That's the observation. There's a real split in perception. Some emphasizing the violence, others insisting it was mostly peaceful protest.
And Bernard notes the presence of unfounded theories swirling around it, too.
Mm-hmm. Theories suggesting maybe the violence was caused by other groups or that the whole event wasn't nearly as serious as the mainstream media made it out to be.
And perhaps most concerningly, that PRRI data Bernard cites also showed a link between believing the election was stolen and, well, an increased belief that political violence might sometimes be necessary.
Yes, that correlation was present in the data he looked at, a deeply worrying trend.
The fact that these beliefs, these false narratives, persist so strongly, even with so much contrary evidence, Bernard attributes that partly to the sheer power of repetition, right?
He does. It relates to something called the illusory truth effect.
Oh, what's that?
It's the psychological finding where repeated exposure to a statement, even when you initially know is false, can make it feel more familiar over time. And that familiarity can get mistaken for truthfulness.
So just hearing something over and over makes it seem more true, even if you consciously knew better at first.
That's the idea. The constant reinforcement, especially within these echo chambers Bernard describes, can gradually wear down that initial skepticism.
And social media algorithms, partisan news, they just amplify this by repeating the same messages constantly.
They act as powerful amplifiers, yes.
Yeah.
Circulating and repeating misinformation very efficiently.
This all seems connected to what people call the attention economy, this constant fight for our clicks and eyeballs.
It is connected. Bernard highlights how many online platforms and creators work on a model where revenue depends on engagement.
More clicks, more views, more shares equals more money.
Exactly. And that can create an incentive to produce sensational, emotionally charged content because that's often what grabs attention, sometimes regardless of strict factual accuracy.
And the fact that almost anyone can publish anything online now. Fewer traditional gatekeepers checking facts.
That's a critical piece of it. The lower barriers to entry for creating and sharing content mean misinformation can spread incredibly rapidly, often without the traditional fact-checking or editorial processes.
So pulling all this together, what does Bernard see as the main consequences? The fallout from this kind of media bias and the erosion of truth?
Bernard concludes the impact on democracy is really quite damaging. It erodes trust in vital institutions, obviously deepens political polarization.
Undermines faith in elections.
Yes, and government legitimacy. It can contribute to threats and actual violence, and ultimately it just weakens our collective ability to engage constructively as citizens.
He really seems to stress that the deliberate spread of falsehoods has been remarkably successful in misleading millions of people.
He does make that point very strongly. And the end result, as Bernard puts it, is this dangerous fracturing of our shared sense of reality.
Which makes solving problems almost impossible if we can't even agree on the basic facts.
It becomes incredibly difficult, yes. Productive conversation needs some common ground.
Now, to add a bit more perspective, Bernard also brings in some observations from Sam Harris.
Right. Harris has talked a lot about societal division, and he makes this distinction between, say, navigating disagreements in your personal life versus confronting public figures whose influence he sees as harmful.
And Bernard notes Harris has been pretty critical of certain figures like Elon Musk and Donald Trump.
Yes, Harris has voiced strong concerns about their rhetoric and what he sees as the negative consequences of their influence.
And Bernard also mentions a critique from Douglas Murray aimed at Joe Rogan.
That's right. Murray criticized Rogan for, in his view, platforming people who promote conspiracy theories without pushing back enough, without sufficient scrutiny.
And Bernard points out that Harris seems to share some of those concerns about Rogan's platform.
He does. Harris has expressed worries that Rogan, perhaps unintentionally, might contribute to spreading misinformation to his huge audience because of a perceived lack of critical challenge or preparation when interviewing certain guests.
Okay, so given all this, what does Bernard suggest is the big challenge here? Both for us as news consumers and maybe for journalism itself.
Well, Bernard really comes back to this point. The business model that rewards catering to confirmation bias is ultimately bad for public discourse. It just is.
So the responsibility shifts more onto us?
It puts a much bigger burden on each individual, yes. To be a really critical, discerning news consumer, to actively seek out different perspectives, and to be aware of our own biases.
This we all have.
Which we all have. And tied to that, the importance of strong ethical standards in journalism becomes even more critical.
Absolutely. Bernard really underscores that vital role of journalistic ethics, prioritizing accuracy, fairness, truth, even when it's maybe less profitable or popular than just telling an audience what it wants to hear.
That commitment to truth is paramount.
Does Bernard offer any potential solutions or ways forward through this complex landscape?
He touches on several key areas, yeah. Things like improving media literacy education, giving people the tools to critically evaluate information from a young age.
Makes sense.
Also, strengthening fact-checking and verification efforts. Those are crucial tools against misinformation.
What about the platforms themselves?
He mentions the idea of greater algorithmic transparency, helping users understand why they're seeing certain content.
Right.
And on the consumer side, consciously consuming diverse news sources to break out of those echo chambers. And finally, actively supporting ethical journalism financially and otherwise.
So wrapping this up, Jeff Bernard's analysis really paints a picture of the significant power media bias holds, particularly in the far-right sphere he examined.
Mm-hmm. And its real potential to, well, erode our shared understanding of truth and deepen the divides we see in society.
Understanding these dynamics, how these systems work, it feels pretty crucial for anyone who cares about having an informed public and, frankly, a functioning democracy.
Absolutely central, I'd say.
Okay, and that brings us to our final thought for you, the listener, to maybe chew on. Take a moment to think about the media you consume regularly. How might it be, perhaps unintentionally, reinforcing the views you already hold? And what steps, even small ones, could you take to consciously seek out and understand a wider range of perspectives? Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.